All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. I hope you all had a wonderful weekend. Today's Monday, October 27th, 2025. And our top story this morning, it is risk on out there. Pile on that risk. Everything's at all-time highs. Why not help yourself to some risk? Sure, that'll speed us on our way to success. We have got stocks are flying. Bitcoin is flying. Safe haven assets, gold, silver, bonds, they're selling off all on another great big all-encompassing trade deal with China, right? It was a great big all-encompassing trade deal. Certainly not another like 90-day truce. We're going to have another meeting and then delay. We don't know. It's a framework. And I guess right now the market is celebrating because they were afraid we wouldn't have a framework. They were afraid maybe everybody would throw a fit. And you know, in lieu of absolute catastrophe, number go up. And that's what's going on this morning. So look, U.S. and Chinese negotiators, they got together over the weekend ahead of this big summit in South Korea. It's one of the biggest things happening this week. There's a lot that's going to be discussed. We've got meetings with the Japanese, the South Koreans, the Indians. Of course, the big one between Trump and Xi, that's the one everybody's holding their breath over. President Trump even mentioned, hey, I'll even stay a little longer if Kim Jong-un wants to get together. So hey, maybe the Trump-Kim bromance is going to be rekindled. Remember that from the first Trump term? That was a little bit of an overture that was just like casually dropped today. Maybe that'll actually happen. So, everything is ripping here. Again, it's not an all-encompassing deal. The trade war is not over, but the trade war didn't flare up. We've got at least another 90-day truce. That truce needs to survive the Trump-Xi meeting later this week. We're hopeful for that. When you get two personalities like that in the same room, that's always a bit of a wild card. And that's why they try to get these things agreed to in advance. And then really it's just like smile, shake hands, have a nice talk, and then go your separate ways before somebody says something stupid. So maybe that'll go on. Maybe we keep with this. Now, look, we've got a couple of different things going on this morning, or a couple different facets of this deal. Rare earths are supposed to be resumed, those shipments. And soybeans. The Chinese are supposed to start buying soybeans. President Trump teased a very large purchase of soybeans is expected. In exchange for that, the United States is taking 100% tariffs on China off the table. No mention about U.S. export controls of chips. That's interesting that that was kind of left out of this tentative framework. So it looks like soybeans, rare earths, and tariffs are the big ones. There hasn't been any talk about Taiwan. There hasn't been any talk about that. So again, there's plenty that could still go wrong here. Now, while stocks are ripping on this news and everybody is very bullish and piling on the risk, we are seeing some things like rare earth stocks are selling off this morning. It's companies like MP Materials, all these companies that had ripped on rumors or confirmation of the U.S. government taking a stake in them, they are all selling off hard on this news because the Chinese are going to start shipping their rare earths again. So maybe some of the demand that was anticipated for those companies is now disappearing. Although I would add companies like MP Materials, there were guarantees from the Defense Department in that deal with the government that no matter what happened, the Defense Department was going to buy their output at a fixed price. So I'm a little surprised to see that one selling off this morning. We've got gold and silver are down big again on this news as well. Interesting story on gold, the Philippine Central Bank. Their big honcho at the Philippine Central Bank is talking about selling off some of their gold reserves this morning. Didn't have Philippine Central Bank dumping gold on my 2020s bingo card. We've got lease rates in London for silver are way down from the highs. They were as high as 30% a couple of weeks ago. Now they are down to 5%. The cost to borrow shares of the SLV are way, way down. It looks like the silver squeeze in London is over. It looks like the bars from New York that were shipped across the pond showed up and filled the demand. Combine that with the price smash that we saw late last week or early last week, the week before that. It looks like the market has settled down. And look, there's good and there's bad. There's two ways you could look at that. You could say, okay, the top is in. That's one way you could interpret it. And maybe, oh, there's going to be another crash like we saw at $50 in 2011 and 1980. Or another way you could look at it is the market has settled down. It is now back to a neutral state, and it has settled at a much higher price level than before, which means we could be coiling the spring again and getting ready to move higher. Only time will tell. But for now, the shortage of physical bars in London appears to be behind us. We talked a lot about trade deals this morning. There's another not trade deal going on here, or I should say an untrade deal. Canada, they're getting an extra 10% tariffs. It seems the president threw a fit over that Ronald Reagan ad. He took that personally. We heard about that last week. He stopped all trade negotiations because of a commercial. And now Canada gets another 10% because of that commercial. Okay, note to self, Donald Trump really hates Ronald Reagan ads targeting him. That escalated kind of quickly there. Maybe we want to cool it on the ads, and maybe we want to thicken our skin a little bit on our side of the border here. I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. We have an interview with Commerce Secretary Greg Lutnick. He was in the press this morning. This is interesting. Details of this Japanese $550 billion investment that was part of the trade deal with the Japanese. We're starting to get some clarity on that one. Again, this is all centered around this summit in South Korea this week. The Japanese are going to focus their $550 billion of investments on power infrastructure, things like gas turbines, things like large transformers, pipelines. These are all things that are big bottlenecks in the United States. We can't make these things, and we desperately need these things, especially if some of these power plants that were being promised to pay for the data centers are ever going to get built. We're going to need transformers, and we're going to need turbines at a much faster rate than they're currently being built. Also, shipbuilding is a very big facet of this Japanese trade deal, as well as the pending deal with the South Koreans. And Secretary Lutnick also said that easing of restrictions on visas are going to be included here to try to get the people that we need to help build and train these factories in the United States to bring them over here. That is an overture to the South Koreans, who were very upset when several dozen, even hundred of their citizens were detained and deported at that Hyundai factory that was being built in the U.S. a couple of months earlier. So we've got a lot of movement going on centered around this Pacific summit this morning. Scott Bessent, Treasury Secretary, turns out he's a soybean farmer. That's kind of hilarious. I did not know that. Scott Bessent was talking about the pain being felt by soybean farmers from the Chinese embargo and the trade war over the weekend. And I guess he's having his Bill Clinton, I feel your pain moment. And he said, yeah, I'm a soybean farmer. Well, I know we got some farmers follow this channel. Good news, guys, you farmers, talking to you here. Turns out Scott Bessent is one of you. I bet you guys didn't know that. Can't you just see Bessent, you know, at the end of the day, his back hurts. He's been on the combine all afternoon. Oh, man, you know. Yep, he's one of you. He's just a regular guy. Maybe not so much. We've got an update on the government shutdown. This is interesting and potentially very impactful. No federal food aid will go out on November 1st. And I was reading this article, and there was one statistic in this article that just blew my mind. I knew this problem was big, but I had no idea how big this is. Pay attention to that one. That could cause problems. Javier Milei has won by a landslide in Argentina. The Argentinian midterm elections happened last night. And look, a lot of people were worried Milei was going to get his clock cleaned here. There were some early indicators in some local elections in Peronist strongholds that were suggesting Milei was losing his grip on power in Argentina. Along comes soybean farmer Scott Bessent with a $20 billion swap line and some agreements to buy beef from Argentina, much to the chagrin of U.S. cattle ranchers. It looks like those efforts to prop up Milei were successful because he won by a big margin yesterday. So free markets, capitalism, libertarianism will survive another day. The socialists will not be seizing power once again in Argentina. By the way, I have Doomberg coming on the channel tomorrow. We're going to be talking all about South America. There is a lot going on in South America with Argentina, Venezuela, Colombia, possibly Chinese influences there. And of course, the U.S. fleet in the Caribbean is getting bigger with an aircraft carrier on the way now. So we will be talking with Doomberg, trying to get our heads around the geopolitical situation in South Korea and its impact on U.S. farmers. We have got a big week ahead in finance here, guys. We've got the FOMC. That meeting starts tomorrow. We'll have Fed interview on Wednesday. We've got 5 out of the 7 Mag 7 companies report this week. The question, will they continue to incinerate capital, that CapEx, spend on data centers probably will continue it. There have been some signs that it may be about to slow down, but we haven't seen it actually slow yet. And of course, at the FOMC, the rate cut is pretty much set in stone. The question is quantitative tightening. There are a lot of indicators that liquidity is starting to rapidly tighten in the bond market. Just as the reverse repo gets down to zero, we're starting to see Fed discount window get picked up again. We're starting to see regular repos get used again. There are signs of stress building in the bond market, early signs of stress, mind you, but it's time to keep an eye on that. And we got one last one about the North Sea. There's a oil company, Petrofac, is a big oil driller in the North Sea in Europe. They are on the brink of bankruptcy this morning. Possible warnings for the U.S. oil patch as those lower prices continue. And Dad just sent me a text. Thanks for texting me in the middle of the live stream, Dad. You threw me off there. Anyways, love you, Dad. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. And come on back tomorrow. Have your coffee with the melon heads. We do this one every single morning. And right now, the S&P 500 is looking pretty good this morning, up 58 points or 0.86% in the green this morning, rallying on that news of the kind of trade deal with the Chinese. The Dow is also up 284 points, 0.6% higher this morning, just off the highs. And the NASDAQ is leading the way higher, ripping here. Again, big risk on morning, 331 points higher, 1.3% to the upside in lieu of absolute catastrophe. Number go up. Meanwhile, the DXY is lower by 13 basis points here, 98.82. Looks like the decline in the dollar continuing from last Friday when we had that slightly lower than expected inflation print, which, by the way, was largely due to imputations. The BLS kind of let slip that, some of those numbers in the inflation print from Friday, they weren't actually measured, collected data points. We imputed them, which means we made educated guesses based on other indicators what they might be. We didn't actually measure prices. Translation, the inflation statistics are bogus BS, but it's all we got, and the market was rallying on it. The dollar is weaker on that news as well. Here you can see the risk-on sentiment in the bond market also. Not that much of it. Yields are higher here by a little bit. That means bonds are being sold, sending the yields higher and the prices lower. But it's not a huge sell-off in bonds. They were a little bit higher than this a few minutes ago. The 30-year yield is at 4.595. That's higher by almost one basis point. The 10-year, 4.015. That's up almost 2 points. The 2-year is at 3.497, up a point and change. And the 1 month is at 4.012, up just a fraction of a point. Now, here you can see the risk on sentiment in commodities here, in particular, the metals. We've got gold is getting sold off again this morning. Spot gold, $4,037.48. That's off by almost 75 bucks here, 1.8% lower, clinging to that four handle. In gold here, the December gold futures at 4,051. That's off by $86 or 2.1% lower. Silver also seeing a sell-off this morning, $47.52 for spot silver. That's off by $1.08 or 2.22% lower. That front month December silver contract at $47.45. That's lower by $1.12, 2.32% lower. Check out the difference in prices here, guys. Spot silver in London is now less than 10 cents higher than that December contract. The two prices have come back in line. Still a little bit of backwardation there, if you can call it backwardation. Just a little bit higher in New York versus London. But I'll show you in a minute how that shortage of physical metal overseas, it's pretty much run its course here. A couple of other commodities. We've got copper futures higher by a nickel this morning. Copper near an all-time high here. That's interesting. Keep an eye on that, rallying a little bit on this Chinese trade deal, perhaps. Meanwhile, platinum is lower by about 0.6%. Palladium is also lower by 1.9%. The PGM metals are selling off along with gold and silver. And oil is higher by about a quarter here, 0.42%, or $61.76 for December WTI futures. Oil a little higher probably also on that trade deal. And you can see the risk on sentiment in Bitcoin this morning as well. $115,000 Bitcoin, it's been ripping here. We're now 5 days in a row Bitcoin higher here. It's been a pretty nice rally in Bitcoin. We hit lows of 102,000 with that brutal sell-off on the Truth Social post threatening those 100% tariffs a few weeks ago. Ever since then, we have seen it rally substantially higher from there. But I maintain that crypto winter is here, guys. I think we're probably unlikely to see another all-time high before something breaks in Bitcoin and takes us lower. Again, that's just my gut. That's what the calendar tells me based on the time since the halving. But as always, be careful on leverage. We saw how brutal that can be. We've got a couple of gold stories this morning. Kind of interesting. Bars and coins steal the shine from jewelry as Indians splurge up to $11 billion on gold this Diwali. Now, this Indians obviously like gold, very much fans of the precious metals. And every year during this Diwali festival, buying precious metals is part of this celebration here. But what's interesting in this article, they're talking about how historically Indians have bought predominantly gold jewelry during Diwali. But this time around, they were buying gold bullion, bars, and coins. The narrow lances of, I can't pronounce this here, guys. Let's just say most of the people thronging the market were there to buy gold coins or bars, not jewelry, said somebody I probably shouldn't try to pronounce. Mahavir Kothari, how's my pronunciation? A wholesaler of precious metals in the Zaveri Bazaar told CNBC. Leading gem and jewelry trade bodies in India told CNBC that more than 40 tons of gold was sold in the country on October 19th, the first day of Diwali. About 700 billion rupees, that's $8 billion, or 1 trillion rupees, $11 billion, worth of gold was sold during the five-day festival that ended on Thursday, according to Indian Bullion and Jewelries Association, or IBJA, and the All India Gem and Jewelry Domestic Council, or the GJC. As of 10 years ago, out of 10 customers, only one would opt for a coin or a gold bar, said Surendra Mehta, National Secretary of the IBJA, but this is slowly changing. He added that according to the estimates of his trade body, sales of jewelry had dropped by about 30% this festive season compared to last year. The enthusiasm among Indians over buying gold for investments has been rooted in their search for returns. Gold has risen by 66% since mid-October, or by mid-October, before seeing a sharp slide. So more bullion versus jewelry. A lot of gold bought during this Diwali festival. Now for the bear side of things. Check out this one from the Philippine Central Bank. Philippine Central Banker says it's time to take profit on gold. The Philippine Central Bank should sell some of its excessive gold holdings, with the precious metal set to retreat further from a record high as safe haven demand eases, according to a policymaker. Gold accounts for about 13% of the Philippine Central Bank's gross international reserves, Monetary Board member Benjamin Diakno said in an interview on Monday in Kuala Lumpur. That's already more than the other central banks in the region, he said on the sidelines of the Bloomberg Business Summit at ASEAN. Our holdings of gold are already excessive, said freaking nobody ever. I mean, said Diakno, a former BSP governor. Ideally, he said the precious metal should be anywhere between 8 and 12% of the central bank's reserves, which stood at about $109 billion as of September 2025, the most in almost a year, with the BSP having sold gold at around with the BSP having bought gold at around $2,000 an ounce and bullion hitting a record high at nearly $4,400. Shouldn't you sell already? Diakno said. What will happen if the price goes down? So Philippine Central Banker looking to take some profits in gold. I did not have that on my 2020s bingo card. But it's not just that going on with the Philippine Central Bank possibly selling gold. We got some updates on silver lease rates. This one from Bullion Star. Silver lease rates moderating from 35% down to 5%. All right, now, and this is one of the reasons why I love bringing Bob Coleman on the channel, because Bob Coleman came on a couple of weeks ago. We did a spontaneous live stream with that big sell-off we had, and we talked about this video and Alex Jones with this guy that was just fudding the hell out of people saying, London is totally out of silver. The lease rates hit 100%. That was total horseshit. All right, they're now back to 5%. If you ran out and if you called that guy and dumped your life savings into gold because of what you heard in that Alex Jones interview, you got clobbered here. So it's important to stay grounded even when the markets start to get frothy here. And you can see how quickly the silver lease rate has come back down to earth For context, rates spent decades near zero, so 5% still indicates some supply tightness compared to historical norms, but the worst of the spike has passed. Wholesale premiums, mint allocations, and refinery constraints are still present. It's also worth noting, guys, that the retail demand for physical bars and coins is still surging. All right, the situation at coin shops and dealers where there was ample supply and the premiums were super low, that has turned on a dime. We're seeing the premiums move higher again. We're seeing the buyers are returning to the coin shops. And so the prices are starting to reflect that. And we could also see this here on Chart Exchange, the iShares Silver Trust or SLV, the cost to borrow. We saw these go as high. I think we were like 24% cost to borrow shares a couple of days ago. Now look at this. There were 2.1 million shares available with a fee of 2.92%. I mean, that thing just dropped like a rock. We went from 20% plus to under 3% in a span of days. This means that the scramble for physical bars in London, it's over, guys. I mean, it's the worst is behind us. It doesn't mean it can't flare up again, but for now it's over. The market is back to normal and we can resume a reasonable market. You know, numbers don't go up in a straight line forever. Pay attention, AI bros. Sooner or later, things come back down to earth. All right, let's take a look at what's going on here in China. The U.S. and China tee up sweeping trade deal for Trump and Xi to finish. So now we just need these two egomaniacal guys to get into a room, not screw things up, and we'll hopefully be okay here. Is that too big of an ask? I guess we'll find out. Top trade negotiators for the U.S. and China said they came to terms on a range of contentious points, setting the table for leaders Donald Trump and Xi Jinping to finalize a deal and ease trade tensions that have rattled global markets. After 2 days of talks in Malaysia wrapped on Sunday, a Chinese official said the two sides reached a preliminary consensus on topics including export controls, fentanyl, and shipping levies. U.S. Trade Secretary Scott Bessent, speaking later in an interview with CBS News, said Trump's threat of 100% tariffs on Chinese goods is effectively off the table, and he expected the Asian nation to make substantial soybean purchases as well as offer a deferral of sweeping rare earth controls. The U.S. would not change its export controls directed at China, he added. So I would expect that the threat of 100% has gone away, as has the threat of immediate imposition of Chinese initiating a worldwide export control regime, Bessent said. He separately told ABC News he believed China would delay its rare earth restrictions for a year while they re-examine it. Bessent telegraphed a wide-ranging agreement between Trump and Xi that would extend a tariff truce, resolve differences over the sale of TikTok, and keep up the flow of rare earth magnets necessary for the production of advanced products from semiconductors to jet engines. The two leaders are also planning to discuss a global peace plan, he said, after Trump said publicly he hoped to enlist Xi's help to resolving Russia's war in Ukraine. Okay, that last part there, global peace plan, resolving the war in Ukraine. If we try to jam that into this same deal, maybe that's what could potentially derail this one. So we're not out of the woods yet, but for now, the market is celebrating this. Looks like, though, the rare earth stocks not celebrating as much. Rare earth stocks tumble as U.S. expects China to delay export controls. Shares of several U.S.-listed rare earth miners fell on Monday as U.S. officials said they expect China to delay introducing export controls on critical minerals as part of a broader deal. Critical metals fell 8.5% in pre-market trade. USA Rare Earth down 7.2%. MP Materials down 5.3%. Trilogy Metals off by 5%. Energy Fuels and Neocorp Development, meanwhile, traded 4% and 6% lower, respectively. U.S. Treasury Bessent told NBC News Meet the Press on Sunday that Washington and Beijing were expected to reach a deal to avoid a new 100% tariff on Chinese goods, with Beijing set to defer on imposing strict rare earth export controls. So not all stocks are up this morning. The rare earth stocks, which have seen one hell of a run these last few months, they're selling off today. And, well, we got more tariffs on Canada because Trump threw a fit over the Reagan ad. And guys, look, the title says it all. We don't need to dwell on this. President Trump slaps 10% extra tariff on Canada over Reagan trade ad. That's really the whole story. They ran a commercial and the president didn't like it. And so tariffs on Canada are going up by 10%. Okay, man, we really took that personally, apparently. Why don't we just move on? That story's ridiculous. Lutnick says Japan's $550 billion U.S. investment to focus on power and pipelines. And this actually, there's a lot of really good stuff in this article here. There's a lot of good news, things to be excited about here. Hopefully this one gets across the goal line as well. U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said Japan's $550 billion investment package for the United States will target sectors crucial to national security with virtually no risk, such as power and pipelines. In an interview with Nikkei Business Daily published on Monday, Lutnick revealed that 10 to 12 Japanese companies in power supply and shipbuilding sectors are preparing to explore U.S. investment opportunities, with the first project potentially identified by the end of 2025, which is only in the next 2 months. Japanese firms would provide gas turbines, transformers, and cooling systems to help expand U.S. power generation capacity, according to Lutnick. And that is two very big bottlenecks there, especially gas turbines and transformers. Those are two things that are preventing new power plants from getting built, even if the political will and the NIMBYism that's blocking it were to be out of the way. There's bottlenecks in turbines and transformers. So if the Japanese are going to invest preferably in U.S. domestic production of those things, that would be a big win for the U.S. The Commerce Secretary also stated that tariffs on Japanese-made semiconductors and pharmaceuticals will remain at 15%. And Lutnick indicated that Washington will likely ease visa regulations to allow foreign workers to enter the U.S. to build factories and train American workers. That is an overture to the South Koreans, who are still sore about that raid at the Hyundai plant. And I believe it was in South Carolina. Don't quote me on that location, but it was just a few weeks ago. That was a bit of a geopolitical blunder. So the easing of visa regulations, not just an overture to the Japanese, also to the South Koreans. That South Korean $330 billion investment, half of which is supposed to go into shipbuilding, that too is on the docket for this meeting in South Korea this week. So good things happening there. This one kind of cracked me up. Trump Treasury Secretary Bessent says he felt pain from China because he's a soybean farmer. Ah, yes. This is Bill Clinton moment. I feel your pain. Yeah, he's just a regular guy. Doesn't he look like a soybean farmer? I mean, many's the time I've seen a man riding a tractor dressed like that. Heck, the guy's practically screaming soybean farmer. So why is Bessent saying he's a soybean farmer? After Trump ignited a trade war with Beijing earlier this year, China stopped buying soybeans. Do you see a real light at the end of the tunnel there? They may allow soybeans again, Raddatz asked in this interview. Bessent replied, Martha, in case you don't know it, I'm actually a soybean farmer. So I have felt this pain too. Yes, the struggle is real, Mr. Secretary. Bessent's government financial disclosure shows that he owns soybean and corn farmland in North Dakota that has an estimated worth between $5 million and $25 million. On that disclosure, Bessent said the farmland generates between $100,000 and $1 million in rental income for him annually. All right, so he owns land and he rents it to soybean farmers. That doesn't make you a soybean farmer, Scott. The Treasury Secretary told Raddatz on Sunday, I think we have addressed the farmers' concerns and I'm not going to get ahead of the president, but I believe when the announcement of the deal with China is made public that our soybean farmers will feel very good about what's going on both for this season and for the coming season for several years. Guys, one thing I didn't mention in the commodity board here, if you look at soybeans, they are up by about 2% this morning. So a little bit of relief for soybean farmers. We've also got corn and wheat are up more than 1%, almost 2% each this morning. So agriculture commodities are rallying on this rumor of a trade deal as well. All right, Bessent, he's a soybean farmer, sure. Also going on this morning, Trump administration post notice that no federal food aid will go out on November 1st. All right, so the government shutdown is now into what, like its 25th day or something like that. Now it's going to start affecting SNAP benefits. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has posted a notice on its website saying federal food aid will not go out November 1st. Raising the stakes for families nationwide as the government shutdown drags on. The new notice comes after the Trump administration said it would not tap roughly $5 billion in contingency funds to keep benefits through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, flowing into November. That program helps about 1 in 8 Americans buy groceries. And I read that this morning, and it blew me away. 1 in 8 people are on SNAP benefits in the United States. 12.5% of the freaking population is on food assistance. Something is majorly wrong here. Majorly wrong here. What the hell? How did it get that bad? I knew a lot of people were on the government dole, but 1 in 8? Good God. Bottom line, the well has run dry. The USDA notice says at this time there will be no benefits issued on November 1st. We are approaching an inflection point for Senate Democrats. The inflection point for Senate Democrats, he's trying to say it's their fault. Look, both parties have a hand in this. 1 in 8 people on food assistance. Obviously, there is a lot of people on food assistance who have no freaking business being on food assistance. But at the same time, guys, there are people who are legitimately struggling out there who just need help, and they're not going to get it. And it's because Washington can't get their shit together. So, Washington, get your shit together. Get the people off of SNAP who don't belong on SNAP, able-bodied, grown-ass men who are capable of working, and they're just living on the government dole. Like, enough of this crap already. 1 in 8? You got to be kidding me. And at the same time, there's people out there who are legitimately down on their luck who need help. They should be getting SNAP benefits, but because Washington wants to have their silly political speeches and 15 minutes of fame on CNN or whatever the hell, or Fox News, they're not going to get it. So this is innocent people being caught up in this nonsense. Meanwhile, Argentina bonds surge after Milei's landslide win. This one was unexpected. A lot of people were expecting Milei to get clobbered on these midterm elections, but he ended up doing really well. Maybe that $20 billion swap line with Scott Bessent went a long way. Argentina's dollar bonds soared on Monday after President Javier Milei's strong showing in legislative elections beat even the most bullish of forecasts, easing investor concern his economic overhaul of the crisis-prone nation would stall. The nation's debt jumped across the curve in early trading, with dollar notes due in 2035 up more than 13 cents to trade at a record 70.34 cents on the dollar. That's a record? That's a pretty bad record. According to indicative pricing compiled by Bloomberg, the country's bonds led gains among emerging market peers. With more than 90% of ballots counted, Milei's party got 41% of the votes, winning 64 of the 127 up for grabs in the lower house of Congress and 13 of the 24 open Senate posts, according to data published by local electoral authorities late Sunday. Markets had been forecasting the governing coalition would win about 30% of the seats, so they got a lot more than that. The Peronists only got, I think, 20% of the votes here. The peso was already posting gains in the crypto market Sunday as the results were announced. The scale of Milei's victory ranks at the most optimistic end of pre-election expectations, said Alejo Zerwanko, chief investment officer for Emerging Market Americas at UBS Global Wealth Management. His party now holds the political capital needed to accelerate structural reforms. Viva Libertad, carajo, is all I have to say there. Congratulations, libertarians. Another win for libertarians. Who had libertarians winning elections on their 2020s bingo card? Hey, maybe this decade isn't all awful after all. Meanwhile, guys, we got a big week ahead. Let's just blow through this one. Stock market faces midweek double whammy as Fed decision collides with mega cap tech earnings. And that's pretty much the story right here, guys. We got the Fed on Wednesday, and we've got 5 of the Mag 7 all reporting this week. It's going to be a big one, a lot of big earnings. The big questions here, the rate cut is going to happen. What happens with quantitative tightening, and what happens with big tech's CapEx? That's the two big ones there. Big tech CapEx will determine if this AI bubble inflates further or if this is it. And everybody's already kind of got those rate cuts priced in here. The question is, what happens with QT? Now, let's talk about QT. Check out overnight reverse repo down to just $2.4 billion. It is basically down to zero. You can see here, we've been pretty much done on reverse repo for about 2 weeks now. All right, that means there is no longer any extra liquidity sloshing around in the banking system. That's what reverse repo was. It was a sponge that soaked up additional liquidity. That is now gone. And look, now that that extra liquidity is gone, look at what the Federal Reserve's balance sheet is. And you can kind of see here the balance sheet has been coming down and they've been kind of flattening out, approaching zero here, or approaching level, I should say. The Fed's probably going to announce the end of QT at this FOMC as well because, well, the extra liquidity in the bond market is gone, and yet the holdings of the Federal Reserve on their balance sheet are still $6.6 trillion. Guys, I would just add, before this whole crisis started with repo madness in September of 2019, we were only $3.7 trillion. So the Fed balance sheet has still settled at almost double where it was 6 years ago, and they're stopping. They're stopping because if they keep going, they're going to break something. We're already seeing signs of trouble. liquidity starting to dry up, reverse repos near zero, discount window usage is picking up. We talked a lot about this on my Zoom call with my Patreon and Magnanimous Melonhead members on Friday. Now, you know, we're looking at reverse repo down to almost nothing here. Pay attention to this one, guys. We're starting to see problems in regional banks. We're starting to see a lot of bankruptcies. And look what happened the last time they stopped QT. On a dime, they started up the money printer again. And then it went vertical a few years later. So does that mean we're about to start heading north again? Money printer go burr? Probably. And we've got thousands of jobs at risk in the North Sea as this North Sea giant files for administration. And I think that's UK English speak for bankruptcy when they file for administration. This is interesting. Petrofac, one of the UK's crucial North Sea oil and gas contractors, has filed for administration, putting 2,000 jobs at risk. The company, which sends staff to run offshore platforms, has called in restructuring group Tenio to act as its potential administrator, which could be triggered as early as Monday morning. In a statement to the stock exchange early Monday, the company said it had applied to the High Court of England and Wales to appoint administrators to its ultimate holding company. Apparently, a restructuring deal fell through. A potential restructuring deal worked on for a year collapsed into disarray last week after Petrofac's biggest client canceled a multi-billion pound contract. The power grid operator for the Netherlands and much of Germany terminated its multi-year contract to build offshore platforms and onshore converter stations for 6 wind farms. So this is interesting. This is an oil services platform, or really an energy services platform. They do predominantly oil and gas drilling in the North Sea, but they were supposed to restructure their debt. They had this big deal. They were going to build converters and wind farms. That went away, and now they're going bankrupt. So you have both the collapse of the renewable energy transition in Europe and this decline in oil prices contributing here. Pay attention, Conoco guys, you know, energy transfer partners, all you guys who are invested in the oil patch here in the U.S., this does not bode well for domestic oil and gas production if we're seeing bankruptcy like this overseas. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Hunt and Cover. It's good to see you, Hunt and Cover. Thank you very much. He says, nice shirt, Jack, dig that color, deer season. Yes, when hunting deer or directing traffic, except no substitutes. You know, it's Monday morning. We're all a little tired. Maybe we needed a little bit of caffeine and, you know, some like neon orange to help us wake up this morning. So nobody gets hit by a car wearing this baby. I tell you that, Hunt and Cover. Thank you very much for the shirt commentary this morning and for supporting the channel. Metal Seer, gifted one Nobody Special Finance memberships. Well, thank you so much, Metal Seer. And welcome to the Melonheads, whoever that lucky recipient is. Be sure and say thank you to the Metal Seer. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Whoa, M&J. I guess we can make that 51 new Melon Heads. You know, M&J said on Friday that if we got to 66,000 before Monday on our subscriber count, that she was going to make a big membership gift. M&J is a woman of her word. Thank you so much, M&J, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. Hey, you 50 Melon Heads, welcome to the Melon Patch. Be sure and say thank you to M&J and Metal Seer for the donations, and thank you for everything you do for the channel, M&J. I appreciate that very much. Nashville Pasta Man says, if no EBT cards, food lines would be like the 20s. We talking about like food kitchens, like soup kitchen lines, people lined up around the corner? Yeah, you're probably right. You know, look, guys, that is just a political minefield, SNAP benefits and EBT cards. I mean, you got one side that's like, always throw more money at this problem. Just more, no matter what. More money. Give away more free shit. And then at the same time, there's obviously people taking advantage of that. How many is up for debate? But there's a lot of people that are abusing that system, ridiculously so. It's a waste of money, and it is an unnecessary burden placed on the ever-shrinking number of Americans who are supporting freaking everybody. So we got to figure this out. We got to figure out a way to get the leeches the hell off the government dole while still providing support for people who are legitimately downtrodden and just need a little help. I don't have all the answers on how to do that, but FFS, can we at least start talking about it? Maybe just not through CNN and Fox News. Let's just have legitimate conversations about it. 1 in 8 Americans. Holy shit. 1 in 8 Americans on food assistance. That is just wrong. Full on. Hard stop. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel, sir. Madison Hypes says 1 in 8 snap fraud anecdote. I got snap in California, I'm guessing, in college. All right. You know, a college student's notoriously poor, especially a self-supporting college student. That's somebody who maybe comes out of college with high earning potential, ends up paying a lot of taxes in the future, in which case those benefits were probably a good investment. And then there's people who are just perpetually college students who live off of student loans that they have no intention of ever paying back. They're collecting food stamps. They're getting a degree in underwater basket weaving, as my friend Chris over at Financial Prepper would say. There's a big difference between those two there. So, Madison, I'm willing to bet if you're a Melonhead, you were one of the earlier ones, not the latter ones. 1 in 8. I'm really struggling with that, guys. That is obscenely high. Obscenely high. What's that, like 40 million people? Something like that? 41, 42 million people? No freaking way. Thank you, Madison, for supporting the channel. I'm glad things worked out for you. Blaine Cole, what's going on? That's a lot of yen. I am not familiar with the conversion. What is it, like, it's like 151 right now? Thank you, sir, for the generosity. I appreciate that very much, making me do exchange rates this morning. He says, Nikkei tops 50,000 as JPY weakens. I'm calling the bottom on the yen. Well, right now we have got a very pro-stimulus prime minister. What was her name? Takaichi is the new prime minister over there, the first woman in history. Congratulations, Japan, glass ceiling, all that stuff. Here comes the money printer, y'all. You can see it coming. They're doing it in Europe. They got rid of their debt breaks to rebuild the army, getting ready for World War III. It's almost certainly coming back in the United States. First, they got an NQT. Look for that later this week. And Japan is already getting that money printer spun up again. And that's why I'm not worried about these pullbacks in gold. I'm not worried about the sudden decline in silver lease rates and cost to borrow SLV shares. Long term, all the bullshit that's bringing metals higher is still here. It's getting more pungent, even more smellier. And it's like corn and nuts in it. Don't worry, guys. Gold and silver are going to be just fine here. Thank you very much, Blaine Cole, for supporting the channel. It looks like that yen carry trade is coming back. Hey, there's Dad. Apology accepted, Dad. I appreciate it for barging in. Well, you can just take that off my tab. Let's put it that way. I think my tab is probably substantial at this point after 45 years on this earth. But thank you, Dad, for supporting that. Ruggedly handsome face you're looking at right there, guys. Get a good look at it. That's me in another, we'll say 15 years. I'll be generous. Thanks, Dad, for supporting the channel. No worries about the text message. Your timing really sucked, though. Brojo's 420 Cafe says, nice Halloween costume as a human pylon. Cheers. It's not a problem until football players dive over me, holding the ball out, trying to get in the goal line. All right. You also might have student drivers swerving around me, trying to park in between me and anything else orange. Yep, we're going high viz this morning, baby. Come on. Thanks, Bro Joe, for the laugh and for supporting the channel. Tom Dillon says the snap freeloaders on TikTok are threatening to riot and loot if benefits are cut off. Got energy to riot? They can afford an effing job. Well, you know, actually, the R word, the riot word, came up in my conversations with Mish this morning. And we were talking about it when you know, the old phrase I used to use on this channel during 2022 when food prices were going vertical is when it gets too expensive to eat, people get pissed off and bad things happen. And, well, when the SNAP benefits cut off and people get hungry, yeah, tempers are going to flare. You better believe that's a real possibility. Abso-freaking-lutely. Hopefully it doesn't happen. I mean, these days, it doesn't take much to start a riot, sadly. Political violence becoming increasingly normalized in the U.S. Thank you very much, Tom, for supporting the channel. Nostra, Mr. Damas. Thank you very much. He says, thanks for all you do, true gentleman and a scholar. Thank you, Nostradamus. I appreciate that very much. I'm trying to figure out, how am I Noirstradamus? Is that it? You're like, you're this oracle, but a very dark predicting oracle, Noirstradamus. I like that. Took me a minute to pronounce it. But thank you, sir, for the kind words and for being a Melonhead member for 5 months. Appreciate that very much. KDM, thank you, sir, for the generosity. He says, have to get stores for EBT fraud, too. They gave less than full cash value to addicts and charged government for full reimbursement. And that's the fraud that I'm talking about there. Things like that going on. I mean, we've all seen anecdotes of this. Feeding addiction, making the other problems, the other stresses on the system even worse as well. We need to have a real conversation about this. And at the same time, we also need to address the underlying things, the underlying causes that are driving people into these third world squalor conditions, the endless debasement of the currency, which benefits the ruling class and the elite and most disproportionately hurts the poor, who are the people we're talking about here, right? Give these people a chance, right? A job that actually pays a wage you can actually live on, where the Federal Reserve isn't constantly stealing any money they manage to save up at the end of the month via inflation. And then maybe these people won't be on EBT. Maybe they won't be freaking rioting. Maybe they won't be turning to freaking fentanyl. Hey, I just throw it out there. Maybe stop with the damn money printing. Check out WTF Happened in 1971.com. If you think I'm kidding, look at statistics like incarceration rates, like minority unemployment, like the wealth gap, and look at how they all turned on a dime and went straight up starting in 1971 when we went off the gold standard. This is not a libertarian conspiracy theory. You can see it in the charts. It starts with the money. Abso-freaking-lutely. Thank you, KDM, for supporting the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Hey, check out that video I put out last night about the AI bubble and the funny money that's propping it up. You're not going to want to miss that one. It's in my feed. Thank you so much for the super chats and the generosity supporting the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube and Patreon. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Thanks for text during the live stream. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.